From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of October, 2022. Congratulations to Kurt Kimmel. He won't be with us today because he is Appa, or Papa, or Grandpapa for the very first time. Coming up in this half hour, we will talk with Naomi Bloom. She is at TotalFarmMarketing.com. She'll discuss the agricultural commodities with us and what took place in Chicago at the CME Group. And then as we close out our time together, Ben Brown will be here from University of Missouri Extension and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute to take up a broader context of the marketplace. Along the way, I'll give you an update of the agricultural weather forecast for here and in South America on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, December corn today settled at 683 and a half. It was down 6 1/4. The March at 689 and 3/4, 6.5 cents lower. In May futures, down 6 1/4 for the corn at $6.91. November beans up a penny and a half, settled at $13.85 at a quarter. January 13.92 and 3/4 unchanged. In the March, down one at $14 even. Bean meal futures a dime lower at $411. And the bean oil at 66.84. That's up 1.54 for the afternoon. Wheat futures at 861, a penny and a quarter higher for the soft red. The hard red at 952, down 0.25 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $149.20, up $1.42.5. The feeders at 177.25, 215 higher, and lean hogs at $84.95, up $2.70. The crude oil at $85.37 a barrel, down 24 cents. Diesel fuel 0.8 cents higher, $3.68 0.3 cents. And the wholesale price of gasoline, the RBOB today, at $2.43 even, down 2 3/10 cents on this Monday afternoon. Naomi Bloom now joins us. She's with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us on short notice and filling in for Kurt Kimmel today. I appreciate that. As I mentioned in the opening of the program, Kurt is a brand new, and I said Appa. That was because he's German and he wants to be called Appa, which I think means father or grandfather, one of the two. Papa, I think, is actually what it means in German. So congratulations to Kurt on becoming a grandfather today. And Naomi, thank you so much for being with us today. How are things in Wisconsin?
Well, I woke up this morning to snow. So we actually had about 2 inches of snow where I live on the eastern side of the state. It's all since melted, but that was quite a surprise. And harvest on the eastern side of Wisconsin is quite slow. Our crop is just not maturing at all. It's not finishing up here. So not getting as much done as we'd like, but I think we're supposed to be in the upper 60s by the weekend, so hopefully we'll see those combines really rolling soon.
Is that for corn and soybean both?
So we've had some soybeans this past week, so they have been getting started, but it is just a weird season. And when they were cutting corn silage, it was later than normal. So it is, you know, behind by, I would say, probably 3 weeks, and our crop wasn't planted late. It was just this bizarre finishing of the crop. And I've kind of heard that in a few places throughout the Midwest. Just the crop is finishing slowly. So not sure what's going on, but in our part of the world, it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, so as those growing degree days pile up, especially if it's a little slower, tend to get heavier ear weights. Although if you didn't get finished completely, that's an issue. Or did you hurt the crop, or is it just a matter of it finally reaching black layer with the frost and being done?
Yeah, I think it was more of that. Where I live on the eastern side of the state, you know, prime dairy country, we've been really lucky with the weather and timely rains all summer long. So we should have a decent sized crop over here. But again, just took a while to get it wrapped up.
Yeah, so when I say reaching black layer, really it's not quite that, but because it doesn't quite get black layer when it's really filling out and doesn't get enough growing degree days, but still putting on weight, it doesn't quite get that black glare sometimes. So that's what I meant at that point. Now, let's talk a little bit about what happened in Chicago in the CME group. What was trade like, and what are your primary discussion points with producers today?
It has been a very quiet trade environment here for the past few trading days. Last week, too, even after the USDA report, for corn and beans, still range bound. Corn got up to the higher end of the trading range, didn't have a reason to stay above $7. So now we're kind of just nudging back down to support levels, and I think they're going to ultimately hold. Same type of thing with soybeans. They're on the lower end of the trading range, but they don't have a reason to fall apart fundamentally. So I think we're going to see some just back and forth action. With the wheat having that big sell-off last week, I think it's been a buying opportunity for folks to step in here. And the things for the market to be watching this week have more to do with outside market influences, of course, like with the war with Russia, Ukraine, keeping an eye on that grain corridor, just trying to get more piece of the puzzle out of China as they're having their big political gathering this week in terms of what their COVID policy is going to be. Are they going to be opening up, or are they going to still be hunkering down for a while and trying to get their economy rolling again? So those are more of the outside market influences that I think will direct price overall. But yeah, just been pretty quiet here lately, which kind of happened last year at this time. The markets traded sideways for a good 3 months before just racing higher in late December because of the poor weather in South America. So that's where we're at, quiet markets, and just kind of more like feels like we're waiting to hear more of where our demand actually is going to be at in this country, getting a better handle on yield, and looking at global supply and demand fundamentals as well.
Do you suppose it gives producers some time to make decisions related to marketing the crop they're harvesting then?
I do. I really feel like we are going to be stuck here for a while. If prices fall off at all too much, all that's going to do is stimulate demand. And in a sense, it feels like we're just trying to keep prices in check for now. We know the crop isn't a record crop. And so the bigger picture in the world, you know, they don't want prices to rally too much higher because that doesn't help the inflation issue that's out there. So prices are going to be hard to rally higher, but at the same time, if they fall apart too much, all that's going to do is stimulate demand and, of course, then make things go back up. So that's why it feels like we're in a little bit of a holding pattern to just to make sure we see where demand actually is in terms of course, exports, in terms of ethanol. We had our soybean crush number come out today. It was a little lower than what the market was expecting, but that's kind of normal for September as we're, you know, waiting for this new crop to come in. So a lot of little pieces of the puzzle that are going to be coming to light over the next couple weeks. But again, I think ultimately a holding pattern, not a sense of urgency for producers, but do keep an eye on those outside market influences.
What are the things that would make you open a bin door for corn?
Well, the thing that would really make me nervous as if the rail strike, which that's more like the middle of November, if we don't get some bigger news going there, that would be something that could weigh on markets, that would be weighing on basis levels. If there was concrete news that demand was down more than expected, either in the export markets or in terms of somehow ethanol demand faltering, but those are things that right now don't feel like it would happen. So again, it's a situation where I think producers can keep an eye with what's happening with the markets. They can finish up harvest. Probably not too much happens within the markets over the next couple of weeks, but also don't be complacent because of the revolving news headlines that are out there. We're expecting these large crops to come out of South America. So that is also kind of keeping the market in check. We're expecting Brazil to compete with the United States more for corn exports. So that's something that also kind of keeps our grain price in check. So we have to keep an eye on weekly export sales. That'll be out on Thursday of this week. We had our weekly export inspections that came out today. It was a phenomenal number for soybeans. So we are moving product, even with the river levels being lower, even with some of the struggles that are out there, we're moving product, but we'll see if that picks up now as harvest is really getting underway and where demand is going to be as we get to know more from China as their big political powwow wraps up later in the week.
Thank you very much, Naomi.
Yes, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Let's take a look at the weather forecast. We'll start with Iowa, the number one corn-producing state in the nation, where today they have 44 degrees, and they'll drop down to 24 overnight into Tuesday. Another 45-degree day there. Sunshine the first couple of days of the week, and then things will be mostly sunny and begin to warm up, 52 and 64 Wednesday and Thursday. By Friday, full sun across Iowa, 79 degrees. Lows still back in the low 40s for the state of Iowa. In Illinois this week, central Illinois should be 47 and 48 today and tomorrow 50 on Wednesday, so staying cooler. Sunshine each and every day, dropping back to 27 for a low tonight and then 26 for a low tomorrow, so killing frosts and freezes across much of the state. Things will warm up by the time we get to the end of the week for Illinois as well, 65 on Thursday and 74 on Friday, 79 finally on Saturday, and it'll be windy on Sunday with a 78-degree high. Lows will be in the mid-50s to upper 60s by the time we get to the end of the weekend. Lincoln, Nebraska, that state is the number three corn-producing state in the nation. They're at 50 today, 46 tomorrow, 60 on the following day, 71 on Thursday. They, like the rest of the nation, have clear skies today, mostly sunny Wednesday and Thursday, and then back to clear skies. They have an 80-degree high on Friday, in fact, under sunny skies, 45 degrees for the low. They do have a low temperature on Tuesday evening of 19 degrees, 22 tonight in Lincoln, Nebraska. And finally, the number four producing state in the nation for corn is Minneapolis. And we'll get the Minneapolis Moline forecast for the day, 39 today. Under partly cloudy skies, they'll drop to 24 overnight, 43 sunny tomorrow, 47 on Wednesday, 55 and 66 Thursday and Friday. They don't quite reach 70 on Saturday, but mostly sunny skies all the way through the week. So it should be a good work week across the bulk of the Corn Belt. Now let's take a quick look at some of the numbers in Brazil. It's warm, 97 today, 95 tomorrow, under partly sunny skies in Mato Grosso. And then 96, 94, 91, and 83 with rainfall all the way from Wednesday through Saturday in Mato Grosso. In Rondônia, Brazil, 93, 94, 90, 92, 91, and finally 81 on Saturday, and they'll have rainfall all week long. The lows in both of those places in the 70s. You get into southern Brazil, and things get a lot hotter, and by that I mean they're at 100 today, 101 tomorrow, dropping back by 30 degrees overnight to about 70. 101 Wednesday, only a 77 degree low overnight then, and on Thursday 97 degrees with a 75 degree low. And that's a quick look at some of the growing regions in South America. It's Monday. Let's check in with Ben Brown. He is at University of Missouri Extension, FAPRI, Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Hi, Ben. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for doing Commodity Week last week, too. I appreciate that. I want to know today, when you're talking to producers across the state of Missouri, other places, as it relates to export demand, what are your thoughts going forward for corn to begin with?
Oh, that's a great question. So we've seen some low corn export numbers come out the last couple of weeks. Today, we got last week's export inspections, and again, a very low week for corn, and we're kind of following behind a little bit. USDA in the month of October, you know, slashed corn exports pretty dramatically due to, you know, slow movement so far, as well as, you know, just this global competitiveness that we're in. You know, my message to producers is that when we get in these tight supply situations to where we're trying to find ways to get corn to ethanol markets and domestic feeding operations, we're going to pull that what we need out of the export market to begin with. So, you know, we are pulling some of that out there. The other thing to keep in mind here is we have low capacity for transportation, grain transportation, both at the rail and at the river markets. And this is a time of year where soybeans are going to win out over corn, just in terms of getting that product down the river. Traders are going to prioritize soybeans over corn, and certainly that's what we've seen. As we have seen relatively strong soybean export inspections, especially this last week, Kind of getting us back up to where we'd normally see those this time of year. Again, that's prioritizing soybeans over corn in the transportation sector. So my message, yes, it's slow. These are things we would expect as we fill some shortfalls here domestically for use. So.
So prioritizing soybean exports over corn. Has China been in the market?
For corn, not as much. In fact, we've seen very little actual exports into that market. Seen some a little bit of sales here and there. China again makes up a big chunk of our soybean exports, and this week saw very strong soybean exports into that Chinese market. I think it was like 70% of our total shipments this past week. And certainly they've had some relatively strong sales. I think it's everywhere else around the world that is maybe pulling back a little bit in soybean purchases. And that's what's maybe creating, not overly flashy soybean export sales. But certainly, yes, China continues to remain a strong portion of our domestic soybean exports.
Speaking of the domestic side of consumption, domestic usage of soybean over the last year, I believe, has been very good. Can you recap that for me and what your expectations might be for the 22-23 year?
Absolutely. And we have seen relative crush. The September crush estimates were disappointing, both in terms of historical for the month of September, and then also just for the marketing years. We'd had pretty good crush. I think that was a little bit representative of just the time of the year, the fact that we were in a soybean kind of supply deficit during the month of September. A lot of these new crop soybeans hadn't came out of the field yet. Also, it was just a nice time to do facility maintenance. So I think we saw some of that. So September numbers were rather disappointing from a soybean crush standpoint. However, when we look at the use side of that, soybean oil stocks are kind of what I go by a little bit to kind of gauge. I mean, and meal too, but soybean oil right now especially. And we saw a record amount of soybean oil used for the month of September, coming in almost 2 billion pounds for the month. That was a new record. And so, that is kind of what's driving a little bit of this domestic use at the moment. Soybeans, as a commodity, fell a little bit after the report, just kind of on that lower than expected processing value. But then soybean oil stocks or soybean oil prices, on that strong demand and lower production, saw a little bit of an increase as we headed through the day.
Can you tell me what your thoughts, maybe from the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, longer term are for usage for both corn and soybeans, domestically and on the global front, and how the drought in the western part of the United States is or has been playing in that part of your numbers?
Yeah, sure. So we do anticipate to see global demand for products continue to increase. And certainly, I think as we look at the different products, it's increasing from different, different places and different factors. Soybeans continue to see an increase in demand just for global feed use, plus oil seeds or oil seeds in general, which would include soybeans. Kind of some additional demand and global use as it relates to fuel production, and even in those food service categories as well, as we think about vegetable oil going into food service products. So that continues to grow, and I don't think that's really a change. To us, maybe the thing that we're not overly set up for to do is a development of a new use or a new source of vegetable oil. I think of like a cover cress, which is kind of the new term. It's a pennycress that's able to be grown over the winter and be crushed for oil. We're not accounting for that in any of our projections because it's a new technology, and that's just not what we're set up to do in a way. So that is kind of a limitation. So those are out there that could pull back some global demand for oil seeds in the long term, but at least here in the next few years, I don't see that as being a major competitor. On the feed grain side, we take current policy and as it is in place, and one of the current global policies that's a big influencer into where things go is this United Nations grain deal with Russia and Ukraine. It is current policy for right now, and so we do take that into account. But if there was ever, significant changes to that, that would, let's just say, curtail exports out of Ukraine, go from, a million metric tons per week down to like just a couple thousand, 100,000 maybe per week, that would signal that we'd have more demand coming out of the United States for the, the next couple of years or year and a half, whatever that might be. So that's kind of what we look there. But certainly, globally, demand for grains and oilseeds continue to increase.
On the global front, is there concern, or maybe better yet, have you built into your spreadsheets both the Trump and the Biden administration, or the Republican shift and the Democrat general stance on trade? Because both have used tariffs and been more protectionistic in the last 7 years.
Yeah, so as long as it's current policy, we assume that that policy continues throughout, the projection period. That might be, some people would probably look at that and say, oh, well, these, let's just take farm bill, for instance. A farm bill traditionally lasts 5 to 7 years, right? We consider that a farm bill in place is going to continue for the next 10 years because that's current policy. And most people would say, okay, well, we're going to have something new in 5 and 7 years or something different, right? And that may very well be, but we don't make projections or we don't forecast what policy will be during that period. Same way with tariffs. I use that as an example to explain tariffs. Tariffs are in place at the moment, so we take that as current policy, and we project that all throughout the projection period. If things were to come in and say, if we had a new administration or a change of trade policy, for instance, which is kind of unlikely, as you kind of mentioned, just from the standpoint that both parties seem to be following a similar trajectory as it relates to trade. If we had a huge shift in trade policy, at that point, then we would change that within our estimates. But for right now, it's in there.
Anything that we should have discussed today that I have not asked you about?
Oh, there's always lots of things. It's interesting at the farm level. I think you're starting to see farmers and agribusinesses start to really become concerned about, raising interest rates and the hikes in interest rates. This was something that even, 2 months ago, I wasn't hearing, the panic at the farm level. And certainly a year ago, farmers told me I was crazy that I thought interest rates would get above 2% this year. We're in a very different environment today, and I think farmers and agribusinesses start to recognize that. And for those that remember the early 80s, there's some concern out there. So I think that's something that's starting to creep into the farmer uncertainty.
We'll ask you about that again the next time when we talk to you in another month. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown. He is with us. That's Ben Brown. He's an agricultural economist at University of Missouri Extension and with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Joined us here on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget there at our website, willag.org, right now you can sign yourself up for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up on the 21st day of November, the Monday, the week of Thanksgiving.